Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life Radio. Today's show is The Gathering, an Afterlife Discussion, sponsored by Forever Family Foundation. The theme of our talk today is The Surprising Creativity of Grief. I'm Kimberly Saavedra, Director of the Comlock Center, and I'm here with Dr. Betty Kovach. We're sitting in for Bob and Fran, who are visiting California for a conference, and we are thrilled that we'll be able to spend tomorrow evening with them.
Yes, we haven't seen them in so long, so we're going to have dinner with them tomorrow.
So, what about grief?
Well, we hope that you will call in and let us know some of the experiences that you've had, experiences that have helped you to experience grief in a creative way. It doesn't mean that we don't suffer when we experience grief, but there is grief that can kill us, and there's a grief that can be creative. And just in the beginning, I want to say that something that we all know, but I want to say it anyway, and that is that our worldview very often determines how we experience grief. Our belief system and what reality is will very often determine how we go through our grief process. And we all know that for several hundred years, we've had a very destructive view of reality. The old scientific paradigm that thankfully is going out, but nevertheless, many people are still wounded by this belief system, and that is that there is nothing but matter. There is no other dimension, that consciousness does not continue after death, and that when we're dead, that's it. We're dead. It's over. And that can be so destructive to us as people who experience the death of someone we love, and we all do and will. You know, it's so funny, Kim and I were talking this afternoon, how so often people will talk about a possibility of something happening, and they knock on wood and say, but hopefully it won't ever happen. But we know it. We will die. Death is a natural process. And if it's a natural process, then grief is a part of that natural process. And it's the other side of love. And being natural, nature will give us the tools to get through it. So the most important thing is to simply be open. If you are someone who doesn't know exactly what to believe, then let me read you what Dr. Haridas Chaudhuri said, which is one of my favorite quotations. He says, "We need a worldview which shows us how our deepest aspirations are related to the essential structure of the universe." This is so healing after living in a worldview of nothingness and only matter. To hear even this particular quotation, when I first read it, I thought, oh, yes, because when someone we love dies, the only thing we can think about is that person. Our deepest aspiration at that time is to be with that person, to have contact with the person that we loved. And what Chaudhuri is saying, and what so many people are realizing today, is that the essential structure of the universe is living itself out or unfolding through us. It also wants us to be connected to the person we love. Our deepest aspirations are, in fact, the organizing principles or the deepest structures of the universe unfolding through us. So if we have that attitude, then we can be much more open to everything we feel. Kim and I were also talking about how so often it is that people will say the darndest things to a person who is experiencing death. And if it doesn't resonate within us, we just can let it go. And I think what we're kind of trying to set up as a structure is that when we are going through death, we need to trust ourselves, which is a way of also saying to trust the universe, to trust your body, because the body is so conscious and knows so much during this process, and to trust every feeling, every dream, every event that is symbolic. Just simply trust. And grief is a process. It will guide you, and it will take you through the process. If we work with it, it won't leave us in the same place. You know, so many people will say, well, it isn't that you get over it. It's that it's different. And I think that that's true. It changes us, but it's not a static process. It is, in fact, a process.
And also, part of what Bob and Fran were able to do with their grief was to form Forever Family Foundation and put so much into bringing people together and healing through grief and afterlife research and conferences and all kinds of different support and means of sharing and opening and trusting.
Yes, this is a wonderful example. We wouldn't even be having this radio show if it weren't for Bob and Fran's creativity that came into being as a result of their grief process. And they have brought scientists together, people with near-death experiences, and helped so many people through the grief process. So we certainly honor this foundation and the work that they have both done.
Today, we hope that many of you will call in and share your personal experiences. We hope that you'll step out of your comfort zone and realize that you can help someone else along the way by sharing what has helped you with this life-changing, often devastating process.
I think that's really something that we need to respect in ourselves, is that to go through this process gives us gifts. They're very hard gifts, it's true, to arrive at, but there are gifts, and that they are valuable gifts that other people need. So we're doing the grief process not just for ourselves, we discover along the way, but we really can help others by giving them the gifts that we have gained, you might say, distilled on the way.
Right. Today, one of my friends gave me permission to share one of many different experiences she had after the death of her husband, Shelton. So Wendy is my friend, and she used to tell me all kinds of experiences that she was having along the way. And one of them is this. Shelton had a trucking business, and there was this particular dump truck that he really loved. It was his dream truck. And after he died, it wasn't working properly. Something was wrong with the blinkers and the backup lights, and it just wasn't working. And she took it to several different mechanics, and they couldn't figure out what was going wrong, and she was really stressing out. She was working full-time and trying to manage the business that he had left her with. And so she said, one night I had a dream, a crystal clear dream. I was in the kitchen, and Shelton was walking into the kitchen from the little bathroom, and he didn't have his oxygen tank and that little plug in his nose, and she got scared and said, oh my God, you don't have your oxygen. And he said, it's okay. No, it's okay. I just want to tell you, Wendy, stop stressing. And she said to me, you know, he always used to call me back from the edge when I was stressed out. So in this dream, he was calling me back from the edge. And she said, but it's not working. He said, I know, it's fine. In the morning, go to JB. And JB's is a trucking parts store. She said, they open up at 6 in the morning. And he said, just go in, tell them what the truck is doing, and they're going to tell you something to make you know what it is. So Wendy got up. She got to JB's 6 in the morning, told the person at the counter what was going on. And he said, is your whatever part a two-prong or a three-prong? So she called the driver who was on the truck at a job site, and he said, it's a two-prong. She brought the part, drove down to the site, the guy popped it in, and she never had any problem with the truck anymore. So there are, and there were so many different things that she shared that comforted her, that made her know his consciousness was still here.
And yeah, I think that's the important thing, isn't it, is that it's the experience. She knew, and she said, I've heard her say that too, is that the experience was real. It wasn't like a dream.
That's what she said. She said it wasn't even like a dream.
Yeah.
It was like a real thing.
Yeah.
He came in and responded to her as though she were standing in the kitchen with him.
I love that kind of precise information that
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
get. Well, we should probably take a break now, a quick break, and then that'll give you the people in the audience time to think about what you're going to call in and share. So we really hope you do, because that's so healing for everybody else. So we'll take a break now.
On Saturday, February 6, 2011, in Laguna Hills, California, Bob and Fran Ginsberg, founders of Forever Family Foundation and medium Janet Mayer, will speak at a public forum sponsored by the International Foundation for Survival Research. The Ginsbergs will discuss their work and personal experiences pointing to life after death. Janet Mayer will discuss the ancient language she speaks, followed by a demonstration of spirit communication in the audience. For information, email ElizabethMcAdams@expbeyond@aol.com. That's ElizabethMcAdams@expbeyond@aol.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken, even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
I think we have a caller. Michelle, are you on the line?
Yes. Hi, how are you guys today?
Okay,
fine,
good.
Thanks.
Kimberly, it's a pleasure to talk to you. You guys have been talking about some very important experiences that happen after you lose a loved one. I probably could talk for so long with you guys about this. My sister passed away in 2003. Her name is Shannon, and I'm happy to say that I've been in really communication with her ever since she's left. And from her death, I've really experienced just a wave of creativity that prior to her death, I just never really fully tapped. And it just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding. I almost call it a wellspring.
The last couple of years were so challenging,
but, you know, as I was able to move away from, like you were saying, Betty, focusing on her and really bringing it back to me and trying to find ways that things I can do to heal me, you know, and really maintain a connection with her, that's really what it's all about.
How did you begin this creative process? How did it start?
You know, I think it started, I was living out on the West Coast at the time she passed away, and I moved back home here to Cleveland and connected with my other sister, Kelly, and, you know, we were both just devastated and so sad, and we both got inspired just to use art to express what we were feeling. And we had a lot of the same, feelings about, you know, missing Shannon and being in public and not having people understand that we were just brokenhearted because she did die very suddenly. It was very unexpected. And, you know, we experienced people who didn't understand how we could be so sad, how come we're not over this. From all of that experience, probably for about a year and a half, we kind of sat together and said, you know, something has to be different. And so we sat together and decided, you know, we did some research about how people used to mourn in other cultures and still do in other cultures and, you know, or the Victorian times and how people were actually expressing themselves when people pass away. And, you know, we just got inspired to create a symbol that people could wear, that's something that's inspirational and reminds them that their loved one is still with them all the time.
Oh, that's beautiful. Nice. I like that. You know, Michelle, it's interesting because people will tell us that, or you hear people actually saying because they believe it, that I have to move on, I need closure. But that's, as you have expressed it, it's not really the way it works. You just follow what is coming from within, what it is that you need, not something you think you need, right?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, once you start focusing on loving yourself, because I think that's one of the most important things you need to do after, you know, when you're in that deep, dark grief.
Right, take care of yourself.
Just taking care of yourself because you forget about doing that. You know, it's just one of the key things, I think, that will unlock the mystery to your grief. I think when Shannon first died, I remember reading something about, you know, oh, you need to ask how is this going to affect your life? How will this fix your life? How will this improve your life? You know, how will her death do this to you? Don't ask why. Because, you know, I think most people will sit there and, why did she leave? And why didn't they do something? You know, there's a lot of stuff like that when it's traumatic. And Now I'm starting to understand the how. The first couple years, was overwhelming, but, the how is starting to come out. It's like right now, you know, talking with you guys about this, the internet, you know?
When did she die?
2003.
2003. Yeah, July 29th, 2003. She had a tonsillectomy and passed away 2 weeks later from complications.
Well, that is a surprise. Mm. You know, I think that what you're saying is the emphasis is so important is to let the grief speak to us and guide us. And we'll discover the how, you know, through the process.
Right.
Let me just read one quotation, which I love, from Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, who discovered so much about the symbolic function within our mind. And when he was going through terrible times, he said that it was to the extent that I managed to translate the emotions
into images. That is to say, to find the images which were concealed inside the emotions I was feeling. And to the degree I could do that, I was calmed and reassured. Had I left those images hidden in the emotions, I might have been torn to pieces by them. And I love this because...
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, that you found the symbols and created them. And I think what is so important to remember is that with these deep emotions, we can be communicated to the deep emotions can communicate to our consciousness through images. And so, and I love the feeling that the images are there. We just have to let them sort of coagulate and present themselves to us. And then we can continue the process. That's how our process is guided, I think.
Sure.
And that's certainly what you and your sister did, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah, it's, actually, if you guys have a moment, I can tell you the story of the symbol creation.
Sure. Yes, that's good.
My sister Kelly and I were trying to come up with a symbol because we have a company that we took the symbol and created a sympathy gift called Luna's Light. And so we were trying to come up with the symbol because we had all these ideas on gifts to help people heal after grief. So one night we went to a coffee shop and we're sitting there. We couldn't, drawing things and trying to figure it out, drinking all kind of coffee, you know, because we're all coffeeed up. And we ended up narrowing it down to a couple things, and we went to like a Kinko's or something like that that had copy machines. And we were sitting there, we were just trying to figure out, like, just to do something a little bit different. And there was this person there who said that she knew us or knew one of our friends. It was kind of like, you know, a third person, like, oh, I know who they are. And we're like, oh. So we started talking about them. And she just made, like, one little suggestion, like, you guys really just need to, turn it this way and it'll be perfect. And we were like, oh, thank you. And I'm like, give me your name. Give me your phone number. I want to stay in touch with you. Never, nothing. After we left, the next day because we wanted to connect with her again, no, the phone number didn't work. Never saw her again. I asked friends, like, that she mentioned. We were like, well, do you know this girl? They didn't know who she was. Kelly and I are always like, "That was that an angel? Or what was that?" I mean, that experience was just, so, you know, obviously somebody in the universe helped us create this symbol.
Oh, beautiful.
And yeah. I don't know. We just always find it so beautiful.
Oh, I do think it is. I love it.
Yeah. Michelle, I want to ask you if there was a moment or a particular experience that convinced you that Shannon is there, that you are still in touch?
Yes.
Do you feel like sharing it?
Oh, of Shannon? Sure. I mean, I have so many interactions with her. I always laugh because it's like, you know, I still feel like I have a relationship with her, even though it's now been 7 years. And I say laugh just because, you know, some part of you doesn't want to believe it, but it's like she still will communicate with me. She communicates a lot with me in the dreams, just like the story you were telling about Wendy, mm-hmm. where it is so real, like, you know, it's right now. There's just, the experience is not a normal dream. Yep. And she'll give information or share information. I think a funny one is when she first passed away, we would always call her cell phone and leave messages on her cell phone. And I had this dream where I was shopping with her, with my sister and some of our friends. And I'm like, Shannon, I'm like, where have you been? I'm like, I've been trying to get a hold of you. And she, like, looked at me and she's like, Michelle, I have a new cell phone number.
Oh, that's great.
I like it.
But I just, you know, but she, that was her dream. She, you know, that was my dream. And so it's like, and that's the kind of connection I have with her, along with a lot of other things. I'm actually in the process of putting a book together just because there are quite a few stories of
that's important.
That are pretty amazing.
You know, your mention of relationship, I think, is so important. What we had here, obviously, in the physical dimension, is a relationship with those we loved. And when they go into the subtle world or the spirit world, the other side, we still want that relationship. And it's so important to know that we can continue to have it and that it's also not static. It's dynamic, that this
sure.
is a relationship and things are growing and developing and evolving. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing to know. So many people who've suffered so much because they didn't say certain things to the person when that person was alive, or
mm-hmm.
it's for them to realize that that relationship continues and that they can mm-hmm. communicate that and they can resolve those issues is a wonderfully creative thing.
Well, definitely. And I think I meet a lot of people, you know, when I tell them, oh, I have this relationship with her, they, you know, they may have people who have passed on and they're like, oh, well, I don't have that. And I'm like, well, but you can. You know, you just have to allow that to happen. You have to give yourself permission to really engage with them in a different way.
That's a very important thing, because so many people are still wounded in that way by the old world view, and they'll mm-hmm. think, well, they're special people who can have visions or dreams or synchronistic experiences or experiences with the people they love after they've died, but not them. And that, we need to recognize, is the residue of the old scientific worldview that is now we realize it's inaccurate, and it's
right.
tragically inaccurate. And when people have said that to me, well, yes, you have those visions, but that would never happen to me. And I said, yep, that's what I thought too. But it's a part of who we are. It's a part of us as a species that we have
right.
that ability to experience these things. Everybody has that ability.
Mm-hmm.
And like what you say, Michelle, you just have to be, we have to be open to it,
right.
allow it. Michelle, do you want to give the website for Luna's Light and
oh, sure.
say a
that
little
would be
bit
great.
Of kinds of sympathy gifts you have on your site that people can
right. Have? We created the symbol. Well, two things. One was, you know, we really wanted to have some, just kind of wear something. Like if you're at work and you're, you know, it's your sister's birthday and you're having a horrible day, and you know, but you're not going to tell everybody, hey, I'm really depressed because my sister died, you know, and it's her
yeah.
birthday today. You don't really
yeah.
share that all the time at work. So we wanted to create something where you could, you know, wear it at work or in public, where people would say, you know, oh, you have your pin on with the symbol. You know, are you doing okay today? Really helping to build community and build an avenue for communication.
Mm-hmm.
So we took that pin and we've created really beautiful sympathy cards, sympathy candles, candles that have like the name sister or brother, mother. There's 12 different family members of candles that we've created. And believe it or not, you can't find things like that anywhere else right now. So if you want to check us out at lunaslight.com.
Oh, Luna's,
very good.
lunaslight.com.
L-U-N-A.
That's correct.
Light.
Well,
and the reason we call it, you know, our sister's nickname was Luna. And we have a phrase where even on the darkest night, you are not alone. Because
oh, that's
it's
nice.
So
like
deep
that.
And dark, and, you know, the moon is always there. Even though if you don't see the moon, the moon is there.
And, you know, in the ancient world, that was one of the most beautiful experiences. The moon was so important to them because even when it was totally dark, they knew it was there.
Exactly.
And so that's beautiful. Well, you've certainly shared some very creative activity as a result
you.
Of death. That's beautiful, Michelle.
Thank you very much, yeah. Michelle, for calling and sharing.
No, sure. You guys have a blessed evening.
Oh, you too. Thank you, Michelle.
Be well.
Well, that's there's a. I had mentioned that I'd had several experiences after my son died, and in the introduction, I had a quotation from the German poet Rainer Maria Rilke, and I think it speaks to what we've
oh,
been
right.
talking
and this
about.
The introduction to The Miracle of Death.
Yeah, the book is The Miracle of Death. He says that in the end, this is the only kind of courage that is required of us, the courage to face the strangest, the most mysterious, and the most inexplicable experiences that can meet us. That people in this sense have been cowardly has done infinite harm to life. The experiences that are called visions, the whole so-called world of spirit, death, all these things that are so closely related to us have, through our daily defensiveness, been so completely eliminated from life that the senses with which we could have grasped to them have atrophied. And I think that that is true, that we have to sort of realize that we have to refocus and sort of jumpstart
right.
our experiences, because if we think we can't have the experiences, we're really suffering from a culture that has not nurtured who we are and why we're here. And I think we're rediscovering that. Kenneth Ring has written so much about the near-death experience, and he says something which I agreed with so totally, that he said, since we don't have a mystery school in our culture, life itself is creating one through these near-death experiences. And the mystery school in the past, of course, was, and the most famous one was at Eleusis in Greece. This was, these schools really were structured in such a way that we were introduced to life by being initiated into death. And once we knew what that death really is, the womb for new life, for new birth, but we experienced it. We had to experience it. We can't know it by being told or preached at. We have to actually experience this phenomenon of life. But the mystery schools were set up for that. But we don't have such a thing. Those were finally destroyed or closed by the church, actually, eventually. And so we had to have our own mystery school. And I felt when my son died and later my husband died that somehow life had prepared a mystery school for me, that I was going through an initiation into the true meaning of death. And, of course, we have to go down into our own darkness, but darkness is the womb that gives birth to creativity and life. So I thought Kenneth Ring's statement about that is really true. We are changing the old world paradigm, not only through our own experiences, which we're sharing with each other, and certainly this radio show is one way to do it, but also scientists are, in some ways, almost leading the way in discovering how and why these experiences can happen to us. Kim, you had something you wanted to say?
I wanted to give the call-in number. It is 888-815-9756. It's, of course, 1-888-815-9756. We have a special offer for the listeners today of The Gathering at comlock.com, and it has to do with a CD package called What's Death Got to Do With It? So there's a special offer there if any of you are interested. And I know that, Betty, I could ask you to share a couple of things that you wrote about in The Miracle of Death, some very extraordinary, wonderful experiences.
Well, I sometimes have to, well, I kind of, it's amusing to me that there truly would be no book had it not been for my son and my husband. And my mother, three in my family who were killed within about 3 years by three separate automobile accidents. But there were so many visions that came to my husband and to me after our son's death. And our son also had a girlfriend, and she was 19. My son was 20. And she, too, had experiences, which she has said several times there would be no way she could have gotten through that if she hadn't had the experiences with him. One interesting experience was that one evening my husband and I were going to, before he was killed, we were going to go out to dinner with Jenny Pishti, my son's girlfriend. And the night before, my husband had a dream, which again, it was one of those dreams that was reality. And Pishti, our son, came to him and he said, Dad, I know that you and Mom are going to go out with Jenny tomorrow night. He said, it was for her birthday, that's right. And he said, would you buy a dozen roses for her from me? And he said, I would like to have 11 of them white and one red. And the red one is for me. And we realized that he was trying so hard to expand our understanding of death. And he said to his dad, he said, Dad, death is as alive as life. And so he created that symbol for my husband, which we did. And, of course, Jenny was amazed, too, when she saw the 11 white flowers and the one red one, because we usually just switch it around. We think only this is life. And but there was one that I liked very much, too. And it seemed that we'd been going through just some, my husband, too, very profound experiences. And it was just, my husband had some, the whole cosmos, it seemed. It was so profound that it almost undid me. But he saw Pishti in a more visual form. And I didn't. I and my son had sort of made it clear that I needed to release him from that particular image because he was not that image anymore. He was more than that. And, of course, as a mother, I held him pretty much to that image, I guess, for a while. But I could never have so much his image. But I just thought if I could just see him, how good it would be if I could just watch, you know, I wanted to fall back on that. Well, before I woke up that morning, I did have a dream. And I dreamed I was in the kitchen and I was making breakfast. And my son came in and he had on a white Tibetan shirt, which he had gotten from me. I had it, but he liked it so much I gave it to him. He was wearing that. He was wearing his old dirty Nike shoes, tennis shoes. And I said, well, I bought you new ones before you died. And he said, I know. And he said, am I real enough? And so he had worn those dirty shoes just to make himself as real as possible. And then we hugged, and I was quite sure that my arms would go right through him. But it was the other way around. His arms went through me. And I know that that was another way that he was trying to help us realize that these two dimensions are equally real. We have this physical dimension and the subtle world, and then we have, of course, this pure spirit beyond that. But in the subtle world, life goes on, and I think that that's what we have lost, a real knowledge of that other world and its reality.
Oh, yeah. There are so many beautiful experiences, and I met Betty back in 1992. I was a student of hers, and we would meet sometimes and became friends. She shared so many of these unusual stories. She said some people were walking backwards away from her when she was trying to tell them, but they were just so beautiful, and I felt so honored to be receiving such intimate and wonderful stories.
If I could just interrupt, don't forget where you want to go, but Kim is absolutely right. There were two other professors with whom I had been very close. And, of course, I wanted to tell them. I mean, my husband and I were experiencing the most incredible experiences of the other world and with our son. And so I would sort of privately try to tell them. And in both cases, they walked backwards to get away from me. So I realized Kim never walked backwards.
No. But it just began a long-term relationship. And I committed myself way back then to doing everything I could to help share this information, this story, this wisdom about reality, and help inspire people to share it so that we can make the jump into a view that accepts all of reality. There's a line that she's got in that book that I just love, is we're just so accustomed to living in one square inch of reality. Yeah. Of course, she didn't say it just like that.
Well, and certainly I was, but I always longed for more, and I had spent so much of my life studying other people's experiences, and yet I definitely needed my own. I had had dreams, for sure. In fact, I discovered that I had had dreams even before Pishti was born about his death, but I didn't look at it that way. I think that I'm being given the information that we need to take a break.
Okay.
So we'll return soon.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
On Saturday, February 6, 2011, in Laguna Hills, California, Bob and Fran Ginsberg, founders of Forever Family Foundation, and medium Janet Mayer, will speak at a public forum sponsored by the International Foundation for Survival Research. The Ginsbergs will discuss their work and personal experiences pointing to life after death. Janet Mayer will discuss the ancient language she speaks, followed by a demonstration of spirit communication in the audience. For information, email ElizabethMcAdams@expbeyond@aol.com. That's ElizabethMcAdams@expbeyond@aol.com.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just before we took break, you had mentioned that you had formed the Comlock Center in order to get the work out about death, and maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
You are the director of it.
That's right. The Comlock Center is in Southern California. It's a publishing company and a teaching center. At the core of our mission is the philosophy that there is a worldview in which there is nothing but life, that birth and death are events in time and space, and that grief can open us to a new consciousness. As I had mentioned earlier, Betty's work opened me to this concept, and she'd spent decades researching how the understanding of death has influenced the development of our consciousness. So the Comlock Center's events, whether they're live or virtual, whether they're articles or books, or CDs, DVDs. We usually record our live events because people can't get to them. They all are aimed on spreading the word that there is survival of consciousness after death. So, and the major, one of the major reasons that she wrote The Miracle of Death, which was the first thing that the Comlock Center had published, is to help people to understand that consciousness survives physical death, to better cope with the death of a loved one, and to just realize that dreams and waking visions are valuable, natural modes of communication, and we can tune in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was interesting that there was so much focus on my work, but Kim and I had a conversation about it, and we
we knew and realized that this is as much her work as it is my work, is that it's like we've often felt that we must have planned this because our coming together so facilitated talking about death and the continuation of consciousness. And I couldn't get my work out without her easily. She does all the kinds of things and has all the skills that I don't have, and the other way around. So it really works very well. And I think these are some of the creative things that we draw to ourselves when we're open and allow it to happen.
That's true. And it's not the kind of thing you can do if it's not a passion, because it's the kind of thing I do after working and commuting 3 hours a day. It just is what I long to do. It just...
And she loves to get at the computer and do this work, and I love to get at the computer to write, but I wouldn't want to do all the kinds of things she does, so it really works out perfectly, and we're very pleased and sort of astounded with that. And I could say just a little bit about the name of the center, too, KAMLAK, K-A-M-L-A-K. I had been in Russia, in Siberia, and was in a small village called KAMLAK, and we went there really to work with shamans from Siberia. When Kim was trying to find a name for the center, every name was already taken. Every name she would come up with was taken. And I said, "Well, what about KAMLAK?" Because when we were there, I was told by a person who lived there that it was a gathering place for the shamans in earlier times. And that, of course, in true shamanic fashion, that there was a great opening between the upper world or the subtle world and the material world in that place, and great healing took place there. In fact, they said the name KAMLAK means healing. So we chose that name. Of course, no one had it. There is a group since that has it for very different reasons. But it was kind of interesting because one of the visions my husband had had to do with ML. He had a vision in which he was with our son, and our son told him that the earth is in the process of tremendous shift in consciousness and transformation, and that he told him to look up a particular hexagram in the I Ching, the Book of Changes, the Chinese Book of Changes. My husband knew almost nothing about that book, but after the vision, he said to me, "Do you have that book?" And I said, "Yes, I do." So I ran into my study, got it, took it back, and he told me the lines from top to bottom. Usually you'll get them from the bottom to the top. And I said, "How could you remember that?" And he said, "Well, it forms ML, straight, broken, broken, straight, or M, and then straight, broken, ML. And I said, "Well, when I looked up the hexagram, it was working on that which has decayed." And throughout the years, I've seen so many different ways of understanding that, is that we on our planet really are working on the connection to the other world that has decayed. And there's so many things that have decayed that we're working on to help us through this shift. But at any rate, after we had... after she had named the company KAMLAK, one night I saw very clearly, and I felt my son's presence, and he said, "Mom, look at the name. It's K-A, and then it has M-L right in the center, and A-K. So there's that Ka and Ak, the breathing back in, and in the middle is M-L, which is Masters of Light." He said, "Think of all the things that you can say with ML, Masters of Light, Masters of Love, Memory of Light, and on and on and on." Mm-hmm. And I have a section in the book about that. So there are just so many little big things like that.
Right, and Miracle Lovers.
Oh, yes, Miracle Lovers.
Merchants of Light.
Oh, Merchants.
They just went on and
merchants
on.
Merchants of Light. And that, I discovered, was at another very creative time, when so much of this knowledge was decayed, but it arose from the depths of unconsciousness. And it was at one of those very creative periods that there was the Merchants of Light. And actually that has shown up throughout the world. And he said, "Well, these are people who do come when a planet is going through a tremendous shift in consciousness. They come because we have called them. and they have come to help us and to bring that resonance and that vibration of a new consciousness to us. So we were really amazed with that particular experience.
Do you think you could tell the story, miracles, about the music miracles and that experience you had after you left the music store and come home?
Oh, yeah,
That was deep, as they say.
I was in the, just this was just about a week or two after Pishti had been killed, and I was in a store, bookstore, looking at books, and I heard music. The music was so beautiful that I just had to sit down and listen to it. I just really felt transported almost to another world, and I found out later that it was miracles. I bought it. I came home. I changed clothes, jumped into my sweats, and I had put the music on in my son's room, and I was going to go in and just lie down and listen to it, and I did. And but by the time I just arrived into the room and I lay down, I felt my son's presence so strongly there, and I felt him say, "Okay, let's look at all my forms as Pishti. Let's live them through together." And I actually went through that process of seeing him in all of these different ages. And there were times I felt that he was located right up in the air to my right. And I felt like I was surfing these great creative waves, and he was surfing with me. And I realized that if I got afraid, I'd be ripped apart by them. But if I would just go with it, then I would really surf well on these waves of life. And sometimes I would almost want to cry when I would see certain pictures of him. And he would say, you know, he would sort of like a coach. He would say, you know, live each moment fully, then let it go. Live each moment fully, then let it go. And I was certainly trying to do that. But I had some really difficult times. And he said, one time when I felt myself sinking, he just said, flow with time, surf with time, surf on the great force of life. And then the last scene, I saw him in the trauma center, and I kissed him on the forehead, as I had done when finally it became a flat line on the machine. And I just thought, no, I can't do this. I really thought I was going to sink at that moment. And then I thought, how strange it is. I mean, he's already dead, and yet I am with him. His consciousness is filling the room. And then he said to me, remember Faust, that's Goethe's Faust. He didn't know it when he was alive, but he seemed to know it once he was on the other side. He said, remember that it is precisely when he cries out, linger, linger this moment, thou art so beautiful, that he can, that he knew he could fall into the power of Mephistopheles. And I realized that it's exactly, of course, what I'd been doing. Oh, let this moment linger. But it was such a beautiful experience of learning how to surf with life, to really allow myself to experience everything and then let it go. But, of course, that's much more easily said than done.
Right. Well, and that is a creative response where grief guided you into deeper orders of reality, and you learned to live more honestly in a line with your own wisdom of experience.
It's true. It's sometimes, even now, I mean, it will be 20 years this year, I go into the places where we were together when he was young, and I have an incredible feeling of sorrow, as everyone does in such circumstances, and I've then tried to train myself, this moment is a moment of sorrow, and I will live through it, I will flow with it. And then I can let it go.
We'd like to thank you for joining us for this gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Kimberly Saavedra and Betty Kovach, we'd like to bid you good night.
Yes, good night, and thank you
so much.
Thank
you.